Iran once again criticizes the International Atomic Energy Agency for politicizing its nuclear program under the Israeli regime's pressure. Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon begins a new campaign for his second independence referendum, saying that Scotland will be economically better off outside the UK. And the EU threatening to launch legal action against Britain after London decided to scrap parts of its post-Brexit trade arrangements. This is World News. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran has criticized the IAEA for politicizing the country's nuclear program under Israel's pressure, despite extensive collaboration from Tehran.
The IAEA has time and again inspected Iranian nuclear sites and found no diversion in the country's nuclear program. I hope the agency is freed from the grip of the Zionist regime and stops politically motivated measures to prevent the reputation and credibility of the IAEA and its director general from being harmed further.
Mohammad Islami was speaking a week after the IAEA Board of Governors adopted a resolution accusing Iran of failing to fully cooperate with the agency. He rejected that and said that the allegation had been orchestrated by Israel to impede Iran's nuclear progress. He said that Iran provided the agency with clarifications regarding its nuclear activities as part of trust-building measures. The IAEA resolution was submitted by the U.S., the U.K., Germany, and France. Iran's foreign minister has accused the U.S. of pushing for the resolution to gain more concessions from Iran in indirect talks over the 2015 deal.
Despite continued indirect messages between Tehran and Washington, as well as progress made in the talks, the U.S. unexpectedly submitted a resolution at the IAEA to put political pressure on the Islamic Republic and to gain more concessions in the indirect negotiations. Although the U.S. had informed Iran that the resolution was empty of content, the U.S. itself prompted Tehran to issue a stern warning to Washington over such measure. Iran put forward a new political package, a new initiative to the negotiating table. The U.S. had welcomed the initiative, but at the same time pushed for the resolution.
Amin Abdullahian said that Iran, in reaction to the U.S. move, increased its nuclear activities at some sites. He added that the U.N. nuclear watchdog has been informed about those activities. The top diplomat underlined, however, that despite the recent resolution, Tehran will continue the talks, aimed at reviving the 2015 deal until a good, strong, and lasting accord is reached. The IAEA resolution accuses Tehran of failing to explain uranium traces found at three of its undeclared sites. Iran has rejected that. An Iranian-flagged oil tanker that was confiscated by Greece will be returned to its owner. That according to a statement by the Ports and Maritime Organization of Iran. The Greek government has issued relevant order, and that after a court overturned an earlier ruling, to hand over the shipment to the U.S. Instead, the court has ordered for the cargo to be released. Greek authorities are said to be following the verdict. Iran's Ports and Maritime Organization says that Tehran was able to prevent Washington from getting hold of Iranian oil. In April, Greece seized a ship carrying Iranian oil under the U.S. pressure. Tehran had slammed it as a violation of international law and called for immediate release of the vessel and the cargo. Well, there are many people on social media who praise the 20-year cooperation agreement between Iran and Venezuela as an indication that the era of U.S. dominance is over. Hashtag Trending brings you a quick review of social media reactions to that story.
Hey everyone, welcome to another Hashtag Trending with me, Ali Raza. Venezuela and Iran are two friendly nations which managed to develop a strategic alliance over the past years in the face of crippling U.S. sanctions, and now the countries are further developing their ties. In an official visit to Tehran, the Venezuelan president signed a 20-year document with his Iranian counterpart on comprehensive strategic cooperation, which covers a wide range of petrochemical, oil, economic, tourism, political, and cultural fields. the strengthening of ties between Tehran and Caracas was welcomed on social media, with people praising the two countries for standing against Western sanctions and improving bilateral relations while the U.S. makes more enemies. Our first comment on Twitter comes from Peace B. Over the past several years, Iran and Venezuela have been the targets of a severe economic war launched by the West, and their bonds of cooperation proved integral to overcoming unilateral sanctions. Sentletse says on Twitter, Venezuela and Iran signed a 20-year cooperation agreement that covers agriculture, technology, oil, communications, tourism and transportation. While the U.S. makes enemies, other countries are strengthening bilateral ties. Trucking Vulcan said, neither Venezuela nor Iran respects or fears the USA anymore. I bet if you ask Joe Biden why, he'll blame Putin. Venezuelan strongman Nicolas Maduro declares that the U.S.'s military dominance is over. Many blame the current economic crisis across the globe on the United States sanctions policy that targets the world's major oil producers, including Iran, Venezuela, and Russia. Some people are saying that the U.S. sanctions regime has negatively affected the U.S. and its economy more than those of the sanctioned countries. Let's move on to our next batch of comments. Ali Ujari said, U.S. naively believes the world can continue unaffected by its sanctioning Russian, Iranian, and Venezuelan oil. You want to see a real surge in oil prices? Just precipitate another crisis with Iran or Venezuela. Astro said the U.S. was counting on bribing Venezuela to lure it away from eastern anti-hegemonic countries through promises of easing blockade on the country. Iran and Venezuela today? Ha, ha, ha. Yajnadavam said U.S. sanctions policy should exempt oil for Iran, Venezuela, and Russia. A sanction that destroys your own economy more than it destroys the sanctioned country is pretty stupid, Joe Biden. Thak2K has our next tweet. The U.S. owns the world except for the few independent countries, Venezuela, Russia, China, Iran. It's getting harder for the CIA to keep countries in line. Now calls are growing on the U.S. to stop acting like a dictator and stop sanctioning countries in order to control them. Many people on social media believe that such measures serve no useful purpose other than creating hostility. Our final batch of comments starts with a tweet by Mario Pejic. The EU should not allow the U.S. to decide with which country the EU can trade. If the EU wants to buy Iran or Venezuela's oil, the EU has the right to buy it. Scott Stufflebeam said, tell me again how effective sanctions are. U.S. sanctions. Venezuela, 3 years since 2019, now ranks number one lowest gas price for 8 cents a gallon. Iran, 37 years, excluding 1981 to 1987, since 1979, now ranked number three lowest gas price for 20 cents a gallon. Syria, 36 years, since 1986, now ranked number four lowest gas price for $1.08 a gallon. Ram Gupta said that the U.S. should stop acting as dictator and not use sanctions to control other countries whenever it disagrees with them. The U.S. used sanctions to punish Cuba, North Korea, Iran, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and recently Russia. It doesn't serve any useful purpose other than creating hostilities. And our final comment comes from Observer. If Iran and Venezuela can survive indefinite U.S. sanctions that made them willful and courageous, why other oil-producing countries, especially the Arabs, cannot follow suit by abandoning their inbuilt jealousies and fears of the U.S.? It will make them strong and an international force to reckon with. Well, that's it for another Hashtag Trending. Take care and bye-bye.
Moving on to Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, beginning a new campaign for a second independence referendum despite objection from the British government.
After everything that has happened, Brexit, COVID, Boris Johnson, it is time to set out a different and better vision. It is time to talk about making Scotland wealthier and fairer. It is time to talk about independence and then to make the choice.
Sturgeon was addressing a press conference in the Scottish capital, Edinburgh. She revealed the paper that outlines her vision for future independence in Scotland. Sturgeon, who was re-elected in last year's parliamentary elections, said a people's vote created an indisputable democratic mandate for the Scottish authorities. She's planning to hold a vote before the end of 2023. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has repeatedly refused to grant permission for a referendum. But a Scottish leader saying that she will move ahead with her plans even without London's consent. The first referendum on Scotland's independence took place in 2014 when 55% of Scots said no to the change in the status quo. The Northern Ireland Protocol stipulating the Brexit deal still remains a stumbling block between the UK and the EU. The British Foreign Secretary claiming that London's plan to override some post-trade rules does not break international law.
We are changing the protocol. We're not getting rid of the protocol. I think that's important to acknowledge. We want to protect North-South trade. I can give the manufacturers that reassurance. But what we need to see is East-West trade working properly, removing a lot of the customs bureaucracy that's been stopping trade taking place and adding costs for consumers, but also re-establishing those tax policies applying to Northern Ireland as well as to Great Britain.
Truss said that there is no reason for the EU to take legal action over the UK's plan to change parts of the agreement, and that after the bloc threatened against London's unilateral revision of Northern Ireland's post-Brexit trade arrangements. On Monday, Britain introduced legislation which would remove customs checks on some goods entering Northern Ireland from the rest of the UK. London says that the changes are necessary to improve trade and reduce red tape, but a 27-member EU is calling it a violation of the deal. The EU Commission says it's considering reopening a suspended infringement procedure against Britain, adding that it will not renegotiate the deal. Well, I talked to our correspondent in London, Said Kuruza, tells us more about Europe's reaction to the comments of the British Foreign Secretary on the post-Brexit trade agreement.
The Republic of Ireland, a key nation in all this, also reacting to it angrily, saying, look, this is a breach of an international treaty, which is international law, and there's only one way to call it that. Across the border in the north, in Northern Ireland as well, reaction from Sinn Féin, the Nationalist Party that won in the recent elections in Northern Ireland, calling it disgraceful. And also, the only support, let's say, that it has received has been from the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party, who won't enter a power-sharing government with Sinn Féin, the Nationalists, over the Northern Ireland Protocol. They want it either scrapped or significantly changed. So what you're looking at is a row that's been going on for 2 years between the two sides now. On the one hand, Boris Johnson trying to appeal and please the Brexiteers in the DUP in Northern Ireland, but on the other, angering members of his own political party, Brussels.
Russia is stepping up efforts to force Ukrainian troops out of the city of Severodonetsk. Russian forces have destroyed the last bridge linking Ukraine's eastern commercial hub to a neighboring city. Local authorities confirmed the destruction of the third bridge linking Severodonetsk to Lysychansk, another city still under Kiev's control. The governor of the Lugansk province says that most Ukrainian troops have been pushed back from central Severodonetsk, with 70 to 80% of the city now being controlled by Russian forces. Meanwhile, Russian defense minister says it had asked Ukrainian fighters help up in a chemical plant to surrender. The fall of the city would pave the way for Moscow to fully control the mainly Russian-speaking Donbass region. Ukrainian President Zelensky has urged the West to deliver more weapons to confront Russia. From Donetsk, our correspondent John Miller says that the Ukrainian military fired hundreds of rockets in what was its biggest shelling targeting the city so far.
Let me first of all tell you about the shelling last night. The main part of the shelling happened between 6 and 8 p.m. It was a massive bombardment by the Ukrainian army here in Donetsk. Over 300 missiles are said to have landed. Now, it's the largest bombardment in 8 years of war here. Of course, the pro-Russian fighters, separatists here, have been fighting a war with the Ukrainian nationalists for 8 years. They see the Russian invasion as very much the continuation of that war. I was in my apartment when it happened, and it was massive explosions all around. The very successful Russian air defense in the city, which intercepts a lot of the missiles, but many of them got through. I don't mind telling you, I tried to leave my apartment when there was a lull to do some filming, but I quickly ran back inside as there were three large explosions around me. One 11-year-old boy was killed at a market with her mother. in the evening, there weren't too many casualties. Most people were able to shelter in basements. My neighbors were sheltering in the corridors. But there's been some speculation about why there was this massive shelling last night. Some say it may have been because it was Russia Day, Russia's national day on Sunday, and this was the Ukrainian army's way of celebrating that, if you will, shelling civilians here. There's also some fear amongst many people here that the Ukrainian army may well try and make a push into Donetsk.
The global nuclear arsenal is expected to grow in the coming years for the first time since the Cold War, and that according to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, which says all of the nuclear-armed states are increasing or upgrading their arsenals. The research body highlights nuclear rhetoric by some states and the role nuclear weapons play in their military strategies.
After some three decades of a fall in the global stockpile of nuclear weapons, the world seems to be on the brink of witnessing a reverse in the declining trend. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute's yearly report states that online possessors of nuclear weapons, namely the United States, Russia, the United Kingdom, France, China, India, Pakistan, Israel, and the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, continue to modernize their nuclear arsenals. The arms watchdog, also known as CIPRI, says the total number of nuclear weapons declined slightly between January 2021 and January 2022. However, a senior associate with the think tank says there is evidence of change in where the world is headed and warned that this is a very worrying trend. The trend in nuclear weapons worldwide has been witnessing a declining trend for a long time. It is now lower than one-fifth of what it was within the arsenals of the nuclear powers at the top of the Cold War in the 1980s. And now, CIPRI's report comes at the height of mixed signals regarding nuclear diplomacy. Earlier this year, the five UN veto powers, including China, France, Russia, the United Kingdom, and the United States, declared their intention to take action against the further spread of nuclear weapons. But the think tank asserted that all five countries had since further expanded or modernized their arsenals.
The United States has attempted to take control as a unipolar power, and it's been a calamity for around the world, actually, for so many countries in so many ways. And for the last two decades, they've been driving forward. They have abandoned the nuclear treaties that were hammered out over the last part of the 20th century.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. Allahumma faqbal udhri warham shiddat dhurri wafukni min shidd wathaqi ya rabb irham dha'f badani wa riqqat jildi wa diqqat 'azmi يا من بدأ خلقي وذكري وتربيتي وبري وتغذيتي.
Brothers and sisters, this part of the divine Kumail supplication was under discussion. يا من بدأ خلقي وذكري وتربيتي وبري وتغذيتي. O you who raised in my creation, to the remembrance of me, to the nurture of me, to the goodness toward me, and to the nourishment of me. Habni libtida'i karamik. Bestow upon me, for the sake of you having given rise to me with generosity. Wasalifi birrika bi, and your previous goodness to me. We said earlier that in this part of the supplication, the supplicant is feeling that he is at the presence of the beloved. He deservingly feels that that the doors of Allah's mercy have opened for him. And he, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is ready to hear the servant's prayer. So the servant starts asking, Allahumma faqbal udhri warham shiddata dhurri. O Allah, accept my excuse, have mercy upon the severity of my affliction. Habni libtida'i karamik. Bestow upon me because you have been generous to me, because of your previous goodness to me. Wasalifi birrika bi. Now, in the previous episode, we started discussing another aspect of prayer, which is the reality of supplication and dua that we can see in this divine Kumail supplication. Regarding need
and its realization and its presentation before the Almighty Allah, we said that the true supplicant, first he realizes that he is indigent and destitute, then he presents the needs before the Almighty Allah. This ontological need and faqr toward Allah inherently attracts the mercy of Allah, even before the one becomes aware of it, even before the supplicant raises it toward Allah. The example of need is that of a low and soft land which naturally attracts water and somehow absorbs it. And on the contrary, the parable of disdain for worshipping Allah is that of a high and solid land which does not accept water. Such are the people who are disdainful of Allah's worship and of calling upon Him in repelling the mercy of Allah. Accordingly, He subhanahu wa ta'ala deprives them of it, even though His mercy embraces the heavens and the earth. So, what we are trying to say is that there is an ontological relation between indigence and the mercy of Allah. Each of the two seeks the other and somehow pursues it. The need toward Allah is in pursuit of Allah's mercy, and the mercy of Allah seeks the object of need and indigence.
Oh Allah, accept my apology and have pity on my intense sufferings and set me free from my heavy fetters. My nourisher, have mercy on the weakness of my body, the delicacy of my skin and the brittleness of my bones. O He who originated my creation and accorded me my individuality and ensured my upbringing and welfare and provided my sustenance, I beg You to restore Your favors and blessings upon me as You did in the beginning of my life. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So what we said earlier on about the relationship of faqr and indigence and the attraction of Almighty Allah's mercy is exactly similar to the relation that exists between the weakness and neediness of a baby and the love and affection of a mother. Each of the two seeks the other. The feebleness of the infant seeks the affection of the mother, whilst the affection and sympathy of the mother are in pursuit of the weakness of the infant. So, she always takes care of her. So in the existence, it is similar to a learned man who is in search of an ignorant, a physician who seeks the sick to cure him, and the strong that always searches for the weak in order to support him. In brief, this is the norm and sunnah of Allah, which is functioning in everything. As Shaykh Baha'i has narrated, we should be like the man named Toba, who was always estimating his own deeds. When he was 60, he counted all days of his life, which was 21,500 days. So he said, "Woe on me, if I have not done but one sin every day, I have done at least 21,500 sins until now. Am I to visit my Lord in such a sinful state?" So he cried loudly, he fell down to the ground and died. My Lord, everything I am your creature. I'm under your dominance. We are under your will. We are under your intention. We have no escape. O Lord, you have created us from the soil. You have had regard for us while we were nothing worthy of note. And then you trained us. You had mercy and you had blessings on us. Now we have come to your presence, weeping, broken, humble, and we are asking you to forgive us because of your previous goodness and generosity toward us. Habni libtida'i karamik wa salifi birrikabi. Thank you for staying with us, brothers and sisters. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through half my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Rising costs in the U.S. have pushed American citizens to the edge with soaring inflation and the government's inability to control the matter so far. According to the Labor Department, the annual inflation rate rose to 8.6% in May, shattering any hope Americans might have had for relief from the skyrocketing inflation. With inflation hitting the highest rate since 1981, rising costs of living has been squeezing households and putting pressure on policymakers to bring the issue under control. In response to the issue, the U.S. Central Bank has since March been raising interest rates, but the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, which has driven up the price of oil and commodities like wheat as it disrupts exports from the two countries, has made tackling the problem more difficult. Polls show a majority of Americans see inflation as the top problem facing the country. Consumer sentiment has plunged and U.S. President Joe Biden's approval ratings have sunk as Republicans criticize him over the issue. But the U.S. government seems to be more concerned about the conflict in Ukraine, where it has so far given away billions of dollars in weaponry.
This definitely hurts the U.S. economy and Americans, the Biden administration's decision not to push for negotiations between Ukraine and Russia is to many of us inexplicable. It's irrational. It's certainly causing enormous carnage and tragedy in that region. And in addition, it's hurting the United States. You know, the average American, when we go to the gas pump these days, I live in California, I'm paying well over $6 per gallon. This is extremely difficult for many American families. So the Biden administration, I think, has been very unwise and damaging in the policies that have been pushed by Secretary of State Blinken and by Victoria Nuland, both of whom are basically neoconservatives.
The price of gasoline in the U.S. has also witnessed a record high, averaging more than $5 a gallon for the first time. Meanwhile, Biden's attempts of lowering prices, namely a record release of barrels from U.S. strategic reserves, waivers on rules for producing summer gasoline, and leaning on major OPEC countries to boost output, have so far proven to be ineffective.
Certainly, the Biden administration should have foreseen these extremely damaging and disturbing consequences. I think that perhaps their policies are driven by somehow, perhaps they think that seeming warlike will help them at the elections coming up very soon. The midterm elections in November are of great concern to the administration because Biden's approval rate is extremely low right now. So they're clearly taking actions that they hope will bolster the results of the election in favor of Democrats.
Saudi Arabia and several other OPEC countries have rebuffed requests by the U.S. to boost oil production beyond the gradual amount. This has led to U.S. lawmakers seeking alternatives to the oil cartel to solve their problems. So far, the U.S. Senate has passed a bill called No Oil Producing and Exporting Cartels Act of 2021. The bill, aside from creating complications for oil companies, is intended to protect consumers and businesses from spikes in costs of petroleum. But analysts warn that implementing it could have some dangerous unintended consequences. Many say the move could harm U.S. energy companies more as OPEC members produce oil much more cheaply than U.S. companies.
The Secretary General of the Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says the resistance would not remain silent in the face of the Israeli regime's efforts to plunder the country's maritime gas resources. Syed Hassan Nasrallah made the remark on Thursday after a vessel operated by a Greek company arrived at the Karish gas field in Lebanon's territorial waters to extract gas for the occupying regime. Nasrallah noted the enemy does not recognize the international law and resolutions, reminding that it was not the international regulations, but actually pressure, war of attrition, and resistance that forced the occupying enemy to retreat from the southern Lebanon and the Palestinian enclave of the Gaza Strip.
Hezbollah is part of the Lebanese government. They have MPs inside, and you know, they can somehow manage to maybe adopt a resolution inside the parliament and then move forward with maybe attacking the Israeli vessels and their workers or so on. you know, to push them away from their resources and their land.
Hezbollah chief also said that the U.S. and Israel are seeking to afflict Lebanon with hunger and partition. Nasrallah said the Lebanese companies that have pioneered to extract the maritime area's resources have been threatened by the U.S. and Israel, warning that Washington and Tel Aviv were after shaving off a large part of the resource-rich area. Lebanon and Israel took part in indirect talks to discuss maritime demarcation in 2020, but they stalled after Lebanon demanded a larger area, including part of the Karish gas field, where Israel has given exploration rights to a Greek firm. The talks were supposed to discuss the Lebanese demand for 860 square kilometers of territory in the disputed maritime area, according to a map sent to the United Nations in 2011. However, Lebanon then said the map was based on erroneous calculations and demanded 1,430 square kilometers more further south, including part of Karish. Israel relies heavily on gas and has long been developing a number of illegal offshore gas deposits in the Mediterranean Sea. This is a particularly sensitive issue for Lebanon, which is dealing with fuel shortages amid a worsening economic crisis.
And I'm pretty sure Hezbollah is wise enough to do this with coordination with other political parties inside Lebanon. You know, Hezbollah does not want to control the country and does not want to push the country towards war, but they want to secure their sovereignty, they want to secure their resources, and they want to keep the country a safe country. And Hezbollah has been proven, you know, with all these years, all their sacrifices and their actions. You know, they're a very credible organization inside Lebanon and a political party that has a lot of good allies. And I think that this is a great opportunity, hopefully, to be able to get some more financial support for the Lebanese nation.
Hezbollah says it has the material and military capabilities that enable it to prevent Israel's gas extraction from Karish. The Hezbollah Secretary General has cautioned the Israeli regime against seeking another war on Lebanon, saying the regime's losses would be greater than those of Lebanon in the event of such military confrontation. This is not the first time the regime has sought to encroach on a nation's sovereign territory, but this time, the response it would receive could be unprecedented.
The US and its Western allies have pushed ahead with the anti-Iran hysteria at the International Atomic Energy Agency in Vienna. The UN nuclear watchdog's 35-nation board of governors overwhelmingly passed a resolution criticizing Iran for failing to explain uranium traces found at three undeclared sites. The resolution rebuked Iran for what it has described as Tehran's failure to answer questions on alleged uranium traces at undeclared sites. It also accuses Iran of insufficient cooperation with the agency. The resolution excludes a recommendation to refer Iran's case to the UN Security Council, a move that would significantly escalate tensions and likely sink the ongoing talks to revive the 2015 agreement. The resolution against Iran is said to have stemmed from information within two quarterly reports on the country's nuclear activities that were circulated amongst board members last week. Iran insisted it had declared all sites which hosted past nuclear activities. The head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, Mohammad Islami, said Iran has no hidden or undocumented nuclear activities or undisclosed sites.
One of the main things to understand here is that the IAEA as an institution is meant to be, exactly as you said, a technical one. But now it is being used as a vehicle for political purposes in order to pressure Iran, in order to continue the maximum pressure campaign that the Trump administration wanted with the support of Israel to isolate Iran.
These fake documents seek to maintain maximum pressure on Iran The Israeli regime has openly called on the nuclear watchdog to censure Iran's nuclear program. In brazen remarks to the Knesset, the regime's prime minister, Naftali Bennett, said Israel expected the IAEA's board of governors to strongly condemn Iran and make sure it will pay a heavy price.
So what we are seeing now is a campaign led by the United States, by Israel, and by European partners who promised that they would uphold the JCPOA and respect Iran and respect the deal and want to push America back into the deal. They are now turning around at the Board of Governors of the IAEA and pursuing this really regrettable, unfortunate, and downright dishonorable policy.
In response to the IAEA's unconstructive approach, Iranian officials have now decided to remove two surveillance cameras of the International Atomic Energy Agency from one of its nuclear sites.
And Iran now, we know in the news, is saying that they will not, if the IAEA wants to do these kind of actions, Iran will reconsider its relationship with the IAEA. And I think it is well within its right to do so.
Tehran says the two cameras had been installed voluntarily and beyond the safeguard obligations of the IAEA. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, has hit back at the accusations, saying Tehran has given accurate answers to questions posed by the IAEA, but the agency bases its reports on the information provided by the enemies of Iran. Iran had earlier warned against the consequence of the unconstructive move by the U.S. and Europeans to disrupt negotiations to salvage the multilateral deal, officially known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA. Iran has warned that it would give appropriate response to hostile moves.
Israel is the main provocateur of this current situation. The Zionist regime is dedicated to seeing a war with Iran. They see it almost as a holy duty, and it's not only extremely dangerous and reckless, but it shows the rogue nature of the Zionist state and of its backers in Washington.
The resolution comes as a pause in the Vienna process entered its third month. Tehran blames the U.S. and its allies France, Britain and Germany for failing to act constructively during the talks. Under the JCPOA, Iran accepted certain caps on its nuclear program in exchange for the removal of international sanctions. The U.S., however, unilaterally abandoned the deal in 2018 and reimposed sweeping sanctions despite Tehran's full compliance with its share of obligations.
Since July 2015, when the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action came into existence, Iran's nuclear program has been open to inspections described as unprecedented in the history of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Under that agreement, Tehran voluntarily agreed to grant international inspectors easy access to its atomic sites well beyond its IAEA obligations. The agency was also allowed to install many more surveillance cameras at Iranian sites. The IAEA's inspections in Iran account for over a quarter of all agencies' monitoring activity around the world. Despite the close cooperation, the International Atomic Energy Agency is once again accusing Iran of failing to cooperate. This week, the IAEA's Board of Governors passed a resolution critical of Iran. The resolution was sponsored by the United States, Britain, France, and Germany. The agency says it is not satisfied with the answers Iran has provided to its probes of three sites. The resolution has been described as a blow to the stalled talks between Iran and the P4+1 group to revive the moribund 2015 deal. The IAEA resolution criticizing Iran was passed amid an intensified Israeli lobbying campaign to derail diplomacy with Iran. Israel is a sworn enemy of the hard-earned 2015 deal and makes no secret of its efforts to destroy it completely. The IAEA's Board of Governors passed its latest resolution just days after IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi visited Israel. Iran is also highly critical of the IAEA for failing to even raise the issue of Israel's nuclear weapons program during Grossi's recent visit. The atomic agency's credibility and impartiality are on the line as it seems to be yielding to pressure by nuclear-armed Israel to mount pressure on Iran.
But I do agree that Iran has good reason to be angry with the resolution, because it is an extension of the one rule for us and a different rule for you approach that's been taken by the IAEA with respect to Iran from the beginning of this entire issue. Iran has the right to develop nuclear technology. Iran has complied with inspections. And what appears to be the case here is that Israel and the United States are together attempting to restrict Iran's development as a nuclear power.
After years of unprecedented inspections in its nuclear sites, the Iranian government seems to be outraged by the IAEA censure. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi pledged that such measures will never force Iran to back down from its rights. Meanwhile, head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, says it is unfortunate that the IAEA is being exploited by an illegitimate regime. He demanded the agency put a stop to infiltration by Iran's enemies in its operations. As tensions between Iran and the agency soared this week, Tehran informed the International Atomic Energy Agency that it is disconnecting over 24 surveillance cameras that were installed in Iran beyond the country's IAEA obligations. Iran is also installing 2 new cascades of the IR-6 advanced centrifuges at its Natanz atomic fuel production facility. The Iranian atomic chief has said that Iran provided accurate answers to IAEA questions, but the agency lacks the will to declare Iran's answers convincing. Iran argues that the IAEA's focus on the country is discriminatory because it accounts for only a small amount of global nuclear activity and is undergoing hundreds of inspections per year. Negotiators from Iran and the P4+1 have held a year of intense negotiations to try to find a way to restore the JCPOA, but talks have stalled since March. The latest episode between Iran and the IAEA could further complicate the negotiations. Observers believe that the IAEA is pushing things in the direction favored by Israel.
Well, I believe that the resolution, which is primarily aimed at disrupting Iran's nuclear development program, is just part of a broader program of regional hegemony on the part of Israel. This program of regional hegemony has been supported by the United States in the past, and in fact, Israel was a prime mover in having the United States invade Iraq on the false pretense of weapons of mass destruction. I'm deeply concerned, and I must say I'm far more concerned than the IAEA could be about Iran's nuclear development program. I am much more concerned than that about the potential for Israel developing this issue via its supporters in the United States and via its own Israel lobby in America to bring the entire region into a potential state of war.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.